I am Deborah Abisola, and this is the podcast for the underdogs. My guest and I share our corporate journey as working class professionals, and along the way, we have some fun. Let's get into it, and welcome to Deborah's Corporate Heart Talk. On this episode of Corporate Heart Talk, I am having a conversation with Andrew Solanki, the founder of MIA Consulting Group, which focuses on diversity and inclusion in the workplace. I learned on this episode that diversity is a fact and inclusion is an act. I hope you enjoy this episode. And before we carry on, can you just tell us about yourself? Like, what do you do? What are you about? I know what you do, but, you know, they would love to know what you do.
Sure. So I run a company. I am the founder of MIA Consulting Group, which is a diversity consulting business. I set it up 2 years ago now. I can't believe how fast time flies.
Yeah.
I set it up on the back of my own experiences being an Asian female, being a minority in the corporate world where I worked for 12 years before I set up my business, and becoming a mum, and really just experiencing life and experiencing some of the barriers and inequalities that some of the minority groups face, and for me particularly being a woman. Before I set up MIA Consulting Group, I was an investment banker for 12 years. I worked on a trading floor.
I worked on a trading floor. You must have been hardcore on a trading floor. Wow.
You know, it was. And I worked at three different banks. And every bank had a different culture. And as times evolved, the culture changed. But it's fair to say that being a woman, you're a minority. Being an ethnic minority, particularly kind of at the beginning of my, early on in my career, I would say was something you wouldn't see as often. It was a really dominating and maybe just, it's fair to say aggressive culture, where you've got to kind of have a thick skin. You've got to have the kind of intelligence, the ability to be quite dynamic and move quickly in the work that you do, but also have a to really just survive there and to do well, survive and do well, I'd say. So I was in banking for I think it was 11 years when I had my daughter, and it was difficult. I had quite a difficult journey with her. She was, I didn't have the smoothest journey. She was in hospital in and out quite a bit for the first year of her life, and I remember that being a very vulnerable point in my life. And I think it's something, you know, these are blessings, right, in some ways, when you have when less good things happen, you have more time to reflect on how you want your life to look, on what's most important to you. And I think around that time it was quite a turning point for me, where actually I really had to reflect on what was important to me. Like, is it just money? Is it other things? Is it a way of life? Is it principles? And I returned back to work after maternity leave. And that was when I felt so kind of my passion and fire for diversity really, really came out. And I just saw so many and experienced so many different, I'd say, struggles, which I saw was, I wasn't the only one.
Okay, that's very interesting, and I'm going to play devil's advocate, and you know I love you, but let's talk about something quickly. Let's just pick the issue of gender inequality or equality and that type of stuff.
Yeah.
So, like, when you're growing up, nobody really wakes up and think, well, I'm going to go to work and somebody's going to be against me because I'm a woman. I don't think I've ever felt that way. It was only until you start going into work or things that start happening and you're realizing, well, I'll give you an example about myself as well. When I found out I was pregnant, I was crying. I was in tears, and I'm not going to say too much because my daughter listens to this at one point in her life. But it was kind of sad. It wasn't a happy tear. It was a tear of my career is over. I didn't achieve my dreams. Do you know what I mean? It was, but that was something that was internal. Like, I don't know what made me feel as though now I'm pregnant. It means I can't do it anymore. I can't be it anymore, right? But that being said, sometimes with the whole conversations of gender inequality and so on, do you mind just letting us know exactly what we are saying about what we want? Because sometimes I look at myself and I think, and no man bashing here, right? I think I don't want to be equal to a man in the perspective of, I know there's just certain things that I can do better and be better. Like, I've been led by men before. Even when I think about my husband, there's just certain things he just doesn't do the way I would do it, right? And I'll give you a little example as well. With this whole COVID thing, we've also seen conversations where people have said some of the nations, the women are leaders, have controlled COVID-19 better.
Yeah.
Like someone like Angela Merkel, the minister of New Zealand, I don't know her name. Jacinda. And people, you know, the conversation hasn't really gone as wide as it should go, but I've seen a lot of, you know, conversations to say, what are these women doing that the men are not? Like, what would you say to those types of thoughts?
So firstly, I think the first thing that I would say is, like, when I advocate and when we look at, like, men and women, I think one thing for sure that I don't believe is that men and women are the same. Like, yeah. I believe we're very different.
Yeah.
I think what I hope to achieve and want to see in the working world is the equal opportunity. So the same access to opportunities for both men and women, but having both different sexes be able to optimize and use their strengths.
Okay, optimization. Okay.
Them,
okay.
Yeah, get them where they need to get to. So if I just look at so when I got pregnant, actually I was super, I'd been working for a long time, my career was going well, I was very positive about the whole thing. For me, where I think the surprises came was when I saw the lack of first of all, when a woman has to actually take absence from work, your visibility is significantly reduced because you're not in the working place. So yeah, there's actually opportunities for your colleagues and others around you who are now, you know, I mean, it's changing now, but, you know, where paternity leave, shared parental leave hasn't taken place,
yeah,
for your male colleagues to be able to use that time to continue to show their performance where you've taken that time out. And then, as you know, like, there are still women still predominantly take on a lot of the childcare duties, and in a lot of businesses there is very much a culture that of an ideal worker, and an ideal worker is someone who can do the traditional hours, is someone who doesn't have to do school runs, is someone who has presents their face at work in an office all the time, where, you know, there are some especially particularly where I was working in an investment bank on a trading floor, flexible working, agile working, all of that was not a thing. And it, you know, even until this point, it's not really been a thing. People are glued to their desks. So where you have got, you know, as a woman, unfortunately, my husband can't have my child for me. So
I wish they could.
I wish you could. But what that means is, I mean, I've had to take an X certain amount of time off. I returned back to work, and between the two of us, it still seems to fall on a woman in so many different ways to do some childcare. And one thing I've noticed culturally is if a man does do a school run, for instance, he's praised for doing that. If a woman does it, she's seen as less committed. And actually, there are lots of biases that I think are just really embedded in us as to how we, who we see as our leaders. And I think for me, when I was at that point of looking into kind of more senior positions, I actually noticed it was so much harder for a woman in the workplace to get promoted, you know, up to a certain point. And actually, when you look into it, it was like they all have these leadership prototypes. And in your mind, a leader is someone who is quite aggressive, quite dominating. Yeah. It's someone who subconsciously, almost even physically, looks like a man. Like, a lot of this is going on at a subconscious level.
Oh, yeah, I agree with it. I agree with what you're saying. I've seen this. Sometimes women that you do see in leadership, they become very masculine. They act like the bros, like, that.
Completely, and that's also because that's survival, right? That's what's valued. And there are, like, so many different types of leadership styles. And what people are, like, only beginning to understand now, and you mentioned it yourself because you spoke about, like, you know, COVID, right? And we've actually seen the few female leaders that we do have of countries. Yes, I admittedly that some of those countries are smaller. However, they have managed to navigate their way through coronavirus better than so many other countries. And actually, a lot of the leadership styles that women tend to hold on to and tend to possess is what we call transformational leadership. So transformational leadership is where you are a leader by empathy, you're a leader by collaborating, you're a leader by having very effective communication. So you've got a different skill set. But in business, in just society, that's not been valued. That's really not been valued as someone who is a true leader. What they look for is someone who is extremely dominating, extremely aggressive in many ways. And that's what they see as leadership traits.
And I think to add as well, it's about emotional intelligence. You know, I read Tony Blair's book once, but there was a point they said that Tony Blair, sorry, it's hard to get political because people go, oh gosh, she reads Tony Blair. But he talked a lot about Gordon Brown. That was the first time I learned the word emotional intelligence, and I've always kept it in the back of my mind and think, what does it mean to be emotionally intelligent? And I feel like those are some of the attributes that we need in the business world to make things flourish. And I think to add as well, because we are BAME, and we are I'm from Nigeria, everybody knows that, and you're from an Asian descent and stuff, and I think for us it's probably harder, right? Or what's your experience for us to get into that equality space in the working world?
Do you know, it's all about familiarity. So the more different you are from those around you, the harder it is to have the opportunities to grow. And a lot of it's to do with inclusion. So actually, when I set up my business, I set it up having a thought about how inclusion is far more important than diversity. So diversity is a fact and inclusion is an act, as they say. Oh. So what that means is it's how you're made to feel in the workplace. Unfortunately, as human beings, we were never taught at school how to cope with difference. So how do you cope with and how do you deal with someone who's very different from you? So I think as an ethnic minority, as someone who's maybe female, as someone who might have a different sexual orientation, you are more likely to be a minority in your workplace. And a lot of people around you aren't always equipped with how to relate to you, how to connect with you. And that then really kind of feeds into like how inclusive they are in their culture towards you. It kind of falls into so many different things.
Let's hold on that, because I think that can work really nicely with what we're going through right now with the Black Lives Matter and the global pandemic and so on, right? But before we move on, one of the things I wanted to ask you, because one thing I really want to achieve with the episodes and the podcast is practical tips and advice. So if we're talking about being in the room, being in the right rooms, that's the number one thing, actually. Getting yourself in the space, being in the opportunity, then doing better than the next person, that's another level, right? What are the practical things do you think? So if I'm looking for a job now, and actually before I say this, I always say to people now, like younger people or just anyone I get a chance to talk to, I say, you know what? The world has changed beyond just getting a job. You know, I have a friend, literally she declines job and she looks about the kind, you know, even when I'm reading a job application, if the language is just giving me red flags, and I like the salary and I like the job, I'm not going to apply for it. Or even if they are saying things, you know, like, someone like me, I always want opportunities where I can work from home. And if they're saying things like, we could consider work from home twice a week, I'm thinking, no, these are not the type of people I want to be around. Like, I don't need you to say you could consider or you may. I need you to say, this is possible. In fact, what laptop do you want? You know? So when we're talking about this, what are some of the practical things that we could do to really find ourselves in companies, in partnerships, in organizations that is forward thinking like this? So for instance, do you have a list of some of these companies that you know want women at their desk? And, you know, yeah, just for me, I just want to, let's practicalize it. So with your consultancy, I know you work for the businesses, but let's just say somebody wants to, you know, I want to go and work for a company and I really want them to understand that I'm going to fall pregnant one day. I want them to understand that, I'm sorry, I'm not going to be sending emails at 11 p.m. because I might be, my daughter might have a temperature at 11 p.m. Do you know what I mean? Like, and I, so do you mind adding to that, like some of the practical things that you might say we should look into?
So, yeah, I would say, firstly, there are, I mean, publicly, a lot of companies have committed to making change. So in different industries, there's different charters. So there's like, you know, the tech talent charter, there's the women in finance charter. There are just various ways that companies have pledged and committed to making a change and being more diverse and being more inclusive. The reality is that you can work in, in one company, every division, every manager could be different and be operating with a different culture. So it's actually quite it's quite individual to different business units. But what I would say is firstly, like you said, like the world is changing, the way we work is changing, and the rise of different industries is changing. So for instance, like in banking, they've taken a bit longer to really start adopting different ways of working compared to, for instance, the tech sector, who operate completely different. And they many kind of jobs there are like working at the pace which suits you, at the hours which suit you. And it's different. It varies quite differently. What I would say in terms of tips is right now we've got more resources on our hand than ever before. Like when I grew up, I mean, I didn't get into banking through knowing anyone. I didn't even know what an investment bank was. It was being resourceful, having hunger, so really having hunger to make change, and networking. So what I would say, like in my day, it was the yellow pages. And now in today's world, it is having access to all the different social media platforms. Mm-hmm. And LinkedIn is a really, really powerful one. When I look at how I've actually built up my diversity network, because I did something completely different before, I needed to get myself in the right crowds. I needed to get the right knowledge. I needed to get the right exposure and put myself in the right place. And I did a lot of that through finding out the type of job role of people that I wanted to speak to, reaching out to them through LinkedIn, and connecting with them and asking for a coffee. At the same time, what I did was try to add value where I can, share my own thoughts, share my own experiences, give back in some ways. And I think now anyone who's listening who is thinking about, you know, getting themselves in the right opportunity has the same, almost the same chance as someone else, because you have got LinkedIn, you have got, you know, the one thing that's you spoke about as well, as we met at a networking event. The power of networking is so, like, it's crazy. It opens doors for you, because people definitely can see who you are. Eventbrite, I mean, we didn't have Eventbrite, it's like years and years ago, where you can actually have a look and search for events that are going on around you that are in maybe with interests that you're looking at or sectors that you're looking at. Like, for instance, I had a friend asking me about sustainability. She said, "Right, Andrew, I've got no clue. Where do I begin? I need to get to the sector. I don't know anyone. How can I go about it?"
Yeah.
And I literally just said, "Right, Eventbrite, have a look for any events that can feed your brain with knowledge. So if you meet someone there, that's fantastic. But if all it's given you is a bit of extra knowledge, that's going to be powerful in itself. Use your LinkedIn. Think about the type of business areas you want to work in. And if it's not meeting up for a coffee, it could be sharing information. What is it like? Where, if, yeah, I don't know if it is...
meeting up for coffee, so 2019. Don't do that anymore.
That's...
olden days things.
virtual means now. So I think it's all about how tenacious you are and how persistent. I think the one that it's fair to say that you might try this with a few people and you get nowhere, and I think the ones who get somewhere are the ones that go past that and just lean in even more and just continue. So I think you've got to have hunger as well, and if you do right now with the connectivity that we have in the world that we live in, I think you can get to the place you want to get to.
I like that positivity and all that. I like what you said about tech. Sometimes you might not want to work in tech, but if tech is going to be more open-minded to you, I don't see anything wrong in shifting. You know, we need to be flexible in our visions and our thoughts, right? Another thing that I wanted us to talk about briefly, what I love what you said, I might get it wrong, you said diversity is fat and
inclusion is an act.
So with everything that's been going on, even with the COVID and, you know, the death of George Floyd in America, I don't want us to talk about our opinion, because everybody has an opinion. You know, I've read so many opinions and so many anger and so many emotions, right? Let's talk about how do we move forward, Andrew? Like, with this thing you said, diversity is fact, inclusion is an act. Like, people are angry. Young people are angry. You know, my little sister said to me, nobody loves her. I said, babe, don't say that. Don't say that people don't love you because you're black. Or because you're Asian. I don't want us to talk about our opinion. How can we practically move forward, in your opinion?
So the recent weeks with the movement has actually definitely hit like a few of my kind of raw nerves and brought back memories just growing up, just from my own experience of being an ethnic minority. And I actually posted a video last week around, again, being constructive and practical. And actually, I think the first thing that everyone can do is to educate themselves. And actually, to make that clear, it's not calling up every one of your ethnic minority friends or your black friends and saying, right, what do I need to do? No, it's actually really reading, and reading beyond the news. So actually trying to understand why we have some of these real deeply embedded like structural inequalities. This is part of history. Is part of our society and psychology. It's actually very deep. And actually, you can just commit to reading, for instance, a couple of books to better educate yourself. And this can be whether you are white, this can be whether you're an ethnic minority, this could be if you're a majority or minority group, it doesn't matter. Each one of us can educate ourselves to get a bigger perspective. From that, you do, I think, a practical step on top of that is to seek perspectives. So inclusion, to act inclusively yourself, you can only really do that when you better understand the people around you. So that's a proactive effort to do that. So try to seek perspectives. Once you've tried to get some knowledge, more knowledge yourself, the other thing, which is so basic and people just don't do it enough, is listen. So really, really listen. And again, Deborah, like you had mentioned before, you know, you're taking time out to really try and absorb the opinions, and there's so many opinions out there at the moment. The question is, how much of that is really being heard and listened to? How much of it is being just seen as noise? So I think it's really important to listen. I think one of the biggest things that all of us can do is understand our privilege. We are all privileged at different levels, but we all have something. And when you have a form of a privilege, it means you have something to give back. And from that, like my privilege, right now in my life is that I'm not living hand to mouth.
Yeah.
So it means that I was able to leave banking to pursue something which doesn't reward me in the same way when it comes to things financially, but it allows me to raise awareness, give back, and try to drive a real change for society. And that's my so that's me using my privilege and what I call paying it forward. In some ways is like someone who, you know, you can mentor someone. If you have, if you are working and you have got some form of knowledge and you can see that there are graduates or, you know, school children who might need a helping hand, look over their CV. That is your privilege, is your knowledge, and is using that to help someone else. So I think, and that's something there is absolutely everyone can do. It doesn't matter what background you're from, it doesn't matter who you are. Find a way in life, I think, is actually part of how we should be. Understand your privilege and give back.
Definitely.
And then I think the other thing that, again, I had said from what I posted last week as well is what I had felt, I had shared some of my experiences, which is nothing compared to some other people, but I had a really difficult time at one of the places I worked, and this was where it was predominantly white trading floor. And I remember I got into, like I said, banking. I didn't come from a place of money. I didn't come from a place of hand-holding to get into my industry. I wouldn't say it's one of the best schools either. And when I was working, I remember being asked things like, oh, what do Indians do for Christmas? Do you have turkey curry and cranberry samosas?
What?
I would have a laugh about it. And that was, it was just before or during a financial crisis. And, you know, like the vulnerability that you feel at that point. And even like growing up, I was saying, like, literally, it was very normal to hear the word packy. It wasn't a thing, right? So, but the thing is, so from sharing experiences, I think it's powerful and it's time to speak up. But one thing that I think is important is that when people speak up, don't just sympathize, try to empathize.
Yeah.
Because people don't want pity, right? People don't want, pity and sorrow. What you want is someone to try to put themselves in your position, think about how it would make them feel, and then do something about it. So I think that's what I would.
I love that. And I think also for me, I'm not going to lie, and some people might listen to this and say, oh, what are you talking about? I think the anger and the emotions, we need to channel it into actions. And I think one of the first actions that I decided past couple of weeks is, I'm going to do a separate episode on this, but one of them is Ted. Okay, we're getting to the end of it now, and I think at this point I just really want to ask you a really, really hard question. And I just want you to be very candid with us, and just, you said a lot, you've been very open, and I'm really thankful for that. But I want to ask you right now, like, personally, or through the people you've worked with, right, what bad experiences have you had because maybe you're of an ethnic minority at work or even in businesses, and how did you maneuver it and came out on top?
That is a good and difficult question. So I think my challenges have come in different forms. So one of the things, actually, this is something, so I won't even just talk about myself, I'm going to talk about just what I see, because I'm obviously in touch with a lot of people who go through quite a lot of different experiences. And one of the things that come up, so let's just talk about, for instance, on a side of being maybe an ethnic minority. I host safe spaces and sessions for people to talk about how they feel. And actually, some people said, we weren't brought up to like challenge our elders. So to like really like give it back to like people who are senior than us and elder than us, because actually we've been brought up to respect our elders. But what's happened in the workplace is I don't come across as aggressive and or as visible as those around me. So I'm just seen as being like completely weak. And I think one of the things that I see, one thing that I've experienced myself, I've always been able to speak up, so that's not been my thing, but visibility has been like a huge issue in terms of being taken seriously. And our lives are different. So I mean, one of my biggest things was the fact that I couldn't relate to so many things of my, like, from my peers. So, for instance, a lot of them had, you know, grown up skiing, and they had grown up, like, doing and having a completely different life. Like, we grew up...
We grew up sheltered. Let's not lie. We grew up so sheltered.
Yeah, and that's how, but to be honest, that's their experiences. And for me, it's like, you know, I was raised by a single mum of four girls. We had a very different experience to those around me.
Mm.
And one of the challenges, I would say, that has been a two-way thing is relating to each other, right? So when you're very different from people around you, can you still relate? Can you still connect? Most people tend not to. Mm. And that's when you don't get that feeling of being included. So I think that's one of the biggest challenges that I've seen. And actually, if I could speak to maybe my younger self and my career, it would be to still put yourself out there and have uncomfortable conversations.
Mm.
I can't say I did all of that until I set up my business. I think and it's hard for people to do that. It's hard for people to call things out, to speak up about stuff, to try and connect and relate to people who are different from them. That is the key to actually making a real change. It's about getting out of your comfort zone. It's about pulling people up constructively and smartly, by the way. And by that, I don't mean causing a huge thing at work because something has happened. I think it's about saying it in a really constructive way and seeing what you'd like to see changed. So that I didn't do enough of.
Yeah.
In terms of other challenges, support that mums get. Again, I've seen it across different industries. It's not enough. One of the things that I advocate for more than anything now is shared parental leave. So for us to start seeing a real change, what more of a level playing field can it be than if, you know, my husband gets the same paid paternity and leave, or can take up his paternity and shared parental leave so that I can return back to work, and he's had absence and I've had absence. So I think at the moment men start taking absence from work because they're going through fatherhood, because they've taken up on it, they'll penalise women less when they return back to work and for that absence, and everyone will almost get that point of equal opportunity.
At the
moment, it's literally hard. So many working mums have it so difficult because they are trying to put on the face of the ideal worker and that of their male colleagues, with potentially a lot more that they're managing behind the scenes and only being penalised for that. So I do think that speaking up about and advocating for policies that will make things more equal. So yeah, I think for me it is this extended paternity leave and dads having time out as well. And I would say, do you know what, another thing is just making a connecting with decision makers, but you know, like making it your responsibility as someone who cares about seeing a change, or as someone who cares about working in a better working environment, to challenge your management in a really constructive and supportive way. And that's how I think you'll be heard. I can't say that I did that enough in my career, and I'd love to give the advice for others to do that in theirs.
And I think with what you're saying as well, as you're saying it, I'm getting more inspiration, and just through other experiences that I've had as well. Yes, you don't want to be combative and stuff, or make things, you know, make a big hoo-ha out of things. But I think at the same time, as workers or as employers, we don't realise there are certain processes in place for us as well to use. And I think, you know, I'll talk about it another time in an episode, but I think we should be open, we should learn about those rights, you know, even if it's 1% right or 1% process that you have, make sure you use it. Don't just leave it unused.
Yeah, and I think it's challenging the culture, because I still think culture overrides a policy. So if there's not a culture of making sure or of allowing, you know, like for instance, dads to take time off, the culture is just going to override that. But it's about challenging that, and like you say, knowing knowing your rights and actually being able to shed the light. A lot of these processes and policies that are in place are for the better good of employees and of businesses. So I think it is about speaking up on that and not being afraid. It's not being afraid to speak up. That said, it's such a difficult one to manage. I think there is a lot, there needs to be a lot of pressure and accountability on businesses themselves. So my work isn't to change minority groups at all, it's to change the businesses and the culture that they provide for minority groups, because they're to blame even more.
Okay, that was a really good, I think you answered that really well. I stayed up and I thought, well, I want to ask her something really hard, but I think you answered that really, really well, so thank you so much for that. The last thing I just want us to talk about, not even just briefly, is if you just, everything you've done, like I'm looking here and I'm looking at your profile, I'm looking at what you're doing now, I'm excited for Mia Consulting Group, and you know, even I told you this offline, this is going to be a pioneer because it's such a niche in the issues that we're having. The issue is not a niche, the issue is big, but the service is a niche. Do you know what I mean? The service is niche, and I really do, you know, I'm not going to get religious, but I do really hope and pray for you that this is something that will last the test of time, and you will become a pioneer in this. It just seems really positive, and I can't even connect it, because sometimes you always stereotype people, you know, finance people, oh, they're not, what do they know? They're not creative, they're not this, they're not that, you know, and you've just done such a vast majority of things in your career that at this point, my question to you is, if you just had to give one career advice to somebody, or even, you know, to our daughters, you know, we're both raising girls, and we're hoping that these, you know, the service that you're providing and the conversations that we're having is really going to pave ways for them, right? But if you had to give one career advice, what would it be?
One bit of career advice. It would be to know what to do, what you enjoy from the outset, and be the best at it. That is, I think that's when you'll last the test of time. I think it's so important to do what you enjoy. And if you become the best at whatever you do, it will pay you dividends. And the other thing, I've mentioned it already, but is being resourceful. You don't need to have everything to get where you need to get to. You just need to know how to pull things together. And that's whatever career choice you make, be resourceful and just be the best. Just always aim to be the best at what you do. I think that's what I said. And do what you, I think it's so important. Do what you love, because I think that's when you last the test of time.
That's when your heart beats, and you know, many people have come on the show and they've said that a lot, so I think, guys, there's truth to that. Let's focus on doing what we enjoy, be responsible about it, but let's do what we enjoy. All right, God, Andrew, we've done so well. I just want to say, oh no, before I said that, actually, do you have anything that you wanted to add? Because I feel like I've been grilling you. Like, do you have anything that you want to add? Do you want anything you want to add or share with our listeners, or anything? Just last word from you.
Good question. I think I've talked so much. I would say, do you know what? Just continue to be. I think for everyone, if you are or you aren't, just you're all role models, and we're all role modeling for other people, and we're looking up to role models. I think just each person to just live life, continuing to inspire people around them, to motivate those around them, and to remember, it doesn't matter what you do, it doesn't matter what position you're in, everyone is role modeling. I think my biggest thing is just to live life with integrity and role model.
Okay, well, that's it, guys. That's it for this episode. I just want to say a special thank you again to you, Andrew. You have been so good. I've enjoyed it. I don't even want our conversation to end, but I feel like you've given us a lot of golden nuggets that if you are listening, or you are listening to action, there's a lot to learn from here. And this is somebody that went out of their way. And as I'm saying, there's a sense of hunger. We need to be hungry. If you're not hungry, you're not going to get fed. And if you're hungry and you don't go and hunt, nothing's going to come to you. You know, whether you're black, white, skinny, short, brown, nothing's going to come to you. You need to go and search for it. Now, I just want to say thank you so much and for coming. You're welcome anytime. And I look forward to more connection with you. And yeah, to my listeners, I just want to say, you know, I really don't know. I say this to you guys a lot. I don't know what you're going through. I don't know where you've been. I don't know what challenges you're going through. But all I can say is keep going and your big break is around the corner. Until next time, goodbye. Thank you, Angie.
Bye, Deborah.
Bye. Thank you for listening to Deborah's Corporate Heart Talk. You can visit my website at www.deborah.tech. Follow me on all social media platforms at Deborah's Heart Talk. And to get involved in all the conversations, please hashtag Deborah's Heart Talk. And remember, guys, keep going and your big break is around the corner. Until next time, bye-bye.